Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back into it, it's Hail Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. We welcome in Brandon Vogel from Counter Reed, counterreed.com. As Vogues, if you could pick anywhere to spend opening day, what ballpark are you drafting?
Whoa, I don't... I was at Fenway a couple of times for opening day, so I feel like I've got that one fairly checked, and I think beyond that, the only option is Wrigley Field. So I think if you polled people that probably would take one of those two parks would take about 90% of the vote, but that's for a reason. I think that's where you want to be.
The Cubby Bear or having a toddy? What's the Red Sox bar, or what are the options? You know, there's Cubby Bear, there's Murphy's. I'm missing a couple probably. But those are the two that I got to wander into with the fam, but not for opening day. But what's the establishment of choice around Fenway?
I'm assuming it's still there. I haven't been back to Boston in a couple of years. And so much has changed around Fenway Park that it's possible it's not. But the institution was kind of called the Cask and Flagon, which is right behind the Green Monster, like literally across the street. Mark McGwire probably homered on top of it during the 99 All-Star game. So that was kind of the place. Like anytime if you watched a Red Sox game, playoff game, that's kind of where the TV cameras would cut to when they wanted a side of what life in Boston was like. So I think, assuming it's still there for yet another season, that's the first one that jumps to mind for sure.
Well, enjoy opening day, tip a pint, and the national pastime is off and running.
I will say some of us here are kind of Rockies fans who cannot enjoy opening day for that reason. So,
well, you have dispensaries and plenty of low dough options to go have a pint. I'll say the area around Coors is pretty awesome. Coors would be my top five, but yeah, it would be Wrigley. It would be, I've never been to Fenway. I think Candlestick, and I know that's 30 years and different naming rights companies ago, but I think San Francisco would be cool just because Grandpa Schmidt was a big Willie Mays guy. Yankee Stadium would be all right. And it wasn't quite opening day, but it was the first month of the season I got to see old Tiger Stadium. And the secondhand smoke is still upon me. It was great from the dive bars around old Tiger Stadium. Let's talk body blows. Not shouting.
Speaking of Detroit.
Hitman Hearn's territory. Let's talk Matt Rhule. Really good column from you with CounterRead, CounterRead.com. And it's in reference to Troy Dannon's compliment of just how physical Temple was in the Rhule era. And we heard from Matt Rhule today. We heard from Thomas Fedoni. Competition's the name of the game here in spring. And I like the fact there's three rotating teams with throwback names. That's all good, but you know what? A lot of video coverage focused on one Dylan Raiola today.
Yeah, I don't think that's gonna slow down anytime soon between now and the spring game. So, it's good to get back in the swing of things, have that first practice availability, and kind of let you know. Not that it ever falls too far from mind, but you know, you go a while without these practice availabilities, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember. Like this is what this is. So, body blows. Yeah, new AD Troy Dannon was asked on Wednesday about his kind of overlap in the AAC when he was at Tulane, and Rhule was in his last 2 years at Temple, winning double digit games both of those years, and you know, he mentioned teams. Teams didn't win the week after playing Temple because it was a physical brand of football. And Well, there's two things that jumped out for me on that. Give me something I can measure, and I will measure it. I don't know if that's a good trait or a bad trait. And also, like, it was interesting to hear it applied to Rule, because we heard about kind of the body blow effect of facing option teams for a long time. Nebraska was one of those teams. You heard it most often now with Service Academy. It's like, oh, this is interesting. Did teams have a tougher go of it the week after facing a Temple? Looked into it. They fared slightly worse than they did in all other games. Like, I think the winning percentage after facing Rule, this is for his entire career, including Baylor and his year at Nebraska, it's about 45% winning percentage versus 49% in all other games. So a little bit of truth to that statement. That said, I think it was close enough for me to say, I don't know if there's real evidence of body blow effect here, but I think the overall takeaway for me is, like, it made sense with Rule. Like, if you had said that about, you know, how Mummy air raid at Kentucky, like, you'd be like, oh, I don't know if that adds up. So I think Dan, it was a great soundbite. It's the sort of thing you say at a press conference about your new head coach. And it's not wrong. It's just I didn't quite see the drastic evidence I was hoping to see.
It's Brandon Vogel with us here on Hail Varsity Radio, talking spring practice and the body blows that Nebraska hopes to have on the field here. That's Matt Rule's way. It's his way at Temple. It was his way at Baylor. And Vogel, it's funny that the topic we're talking about today is body blows. Not funny, haha, but funny, interesting, because what we saw from the open media portion of today's practice was the opposite of body blows. It was quarterbacks throwing to receivers on air. There was no defense out there. Doesn't strike you as body blows. So I'm going to dive into kind of the coach's mind when it comes to media. Do you think the media is really going to get a chance to see anything this spring, anything of substance, I should say, in terms of what Nebraska's identity might be next year, what Nebraska might hope to accomplish next season?
Probably not. Probably as little as possible. That said, I do think Rule, like, thinks about these availabilities, and not just of like, okay, well, let's put a bunch of nothing up there so nobody sees anything. Like, he hasn't struck me as the kind of coach who is like that. Like, I think he wants it to be somewhat informative and to help people's coverage, which should be the purpose of those availabilities. That said, this early in spring, you know, you're still kind of ramping up. I suspect next open practice availability, you might get a little bit more of a live look. That said, Rule did note, you know, a lot of their competition stuff was towards the end. So they did hold some of that back, or if that's just their regular schedule, it's just their regular schedule. So, yeah, now it feels a little bit like spring training, for lack of a better term, for everybody involved. Let's, like, get this first open practice under all of our belts, and a couple weeks from now, it'll be a little bit more informative, I think.
Brandon Vogel with us, few minutes here, Hail Varsity Radio, CounterRead, CounterRead.com, where you can find and read Brandon Vogel, Aaron Sorensen. So let's talk tight ends, as you have some young pups. You've got some gray beards in that room. Good to hear from Thomas Fedoni. He's feeling good, and he's a guy that I think can be big and is super talented. He's feeling physically at a high level. He said that today. How about the sat effect with that tight end room? You've got your offensive coordinator that is able to walk around now because you've got your dedicated quarterbacks coach, but do you expect to see an uptick in tight end usage, not only because Sat's front and center in that room, but just, hey, if you've got these options at tight end, why not use that mismatch? Coaches, if you've got a couple, they love going to them. You know what kind of an issue against a defense the tight end can be.
Yeah, having one of those guys is a huge deal. Having two of them, you know, that are as versatile as Fedoni, I think, is, and as presumably Carter Nelson will be, then you really start, I think, amping up the degree of difficulty for opposing defenses pretty quickly. And having Satterfield kind of devoted to that as his position group is a factor. having a quarterback's coach that is familiar. I mean, we've seen this exact setup in terms of the breakdown of their duties in the past on rule staffs that impacts this, and just getting better quarterback play, which, you know, I'm not ready to say for sure that Nebraska will or who will provide it, but it was kind of at such a basic level last year through circumstances we're all well aware of at this point that I almost think it can't help but be better. So, yes, I do think tight end, particularly led by Fedoni, you know, earlier this week, I kind of revisited the discussion about who's Nebraska's guy. He's still the first one that pops to mind for me on offense, based on what we've seen, but also based on what we haven't seen yet, which I think it might be the key piece with him.
Something's been on my mind, Vogel. I want to get your thoughts on it with the news of the week. I've been thinking about Nebraska. I don't want to call it a log jam in the tight end room, but they have plenty of options. They're very deep at the tight end position. Matt Rhule's made that an emphasis in the first two recruiting classes. Do you think that's deeper than the tight end's role in the offense? I look at what's happening in the NFL with their change to the kickoff rules. With that 5-yard scrum you're going to get, the tight end's going to be very, very valuable. A guy that's both athletic, able to block, able to be stronger than some smaller guys who are out there for speed. It feels like that new kickoff is really, really well suited for tight ends to succeed both on kick coverage and on kick return. Do you think Matt Rhule had some foresight in stocking up the tight end room, understanding that change might be coming to college football soon?
I'd be surprised if he was anticipating that change, though I agree with you. I think now that the NFL's made the switch, it won't be, well, who knows, college football. But my thought is it won't be long before we see something similar. I think the kind of depth at tight end, them starting some guys out there in terms of younger players is more a reflection of just kind of what they want. They want football players. And, you know, if you've got a guy who's kind of that classic tight end size, start him there. Because if it turns out that they can block, then they'll probably stay there. If they're not that good at, you know, on the line or in the interior, and maybe you get bumped out to wide receiver. But, you know, bringing in guys who kind of look maybe a little light coming out of high school but are extremely athletic allows you to do that. So tight end is kind of your – in terms of offensive positions, it's kind of your biggest wild card because a guy can go a lot of ways from there if he's capable of playing tight end.
Couple more minutes with Brandon Vogel at Hale Varsity, powered by Cornhead Lager. We'll get more from Vogues on the other side. We'll hear from Matt Rhule and post-practice today here in about 10 minutes or so. Hour two, busy. We'll run down Mitch Sherman from The Athletic, Gary Barnett, Danny Burke in hour two. I want to remind you about buckling up, hands on the wheel, eyes and focus straight ahead. The driver has one job. That's to drive. This message from the NDOT Highway Safety Office. Some monstrosities to talk about as well when it comes to the old ballpark food list. That's coming up with Hale Varsity.
And now, back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Brandon Vogel with us a few minutes here. Hale Varsity Radio, CounterRead, CounterRead.com, where you can find and read Brandon Vogel, Aaron Sorensen. Vogues, as we navigate through the spring and start doing projections into the fall, we were chewing on this yesterday just a little bit, but ceiling. What's the ceiling for the defense? How much of a jump can year two be? I mean, are you expecting 09 Nebraska? What are your expectations here, knowing what you got back?
Yeah, I'd be surprised. If 09 was the ceiling, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's that far off. I'm forgetting off the top of my head how many points like an Iowa gave up last year. It was between 10 and 13. And you know that 09 Nebraska team was right around 10. 2023 Huskers were at 18. So I think that 13-14 point range is well within their grasp. It might be close to the upper limit, the ceiling, so to speak. If you get there, though, well, that's Nebraska's offense averaged 18 points a game last year, too. That's 5 points of improvement. The offense improves at all, but, you know, all of a sudden you're 2-3 games above 500 most of the time. And I think any Nebraska fan would take that at the moment.
Vogues, on the offensive side, what is the thing the offense can do, step forward, right, for year two to garner not only some more points, but from an efficiency standpoint, if you could pick an item with the offense, they do X better in 2024. That leads to consistency. That leads to points.
Yeah, I think they need to be a little bit better on early downs, which comes down to staying on schedule. It's not fun to talk about, but it's like this hidden weight that good teams apply, where if you're just consistently ahead of the chains, you know, you're really leaning on teams. And with how Nebraska plays, I think that even takes on a bigger area of impact. Explosive plays are probably the quickest way to see some real improvement, but those are kind of tough. It's, you know, it's tough to just say, go out there, let's hit this guy for 30 yards. Well, sure. Like, if you could do that every time, you just call that play every time. So I tend to focus on kind of like the smallest thing you can potentially control. That's being a little bit better on first and second down. And it sets up everything else. So Nebraska is a success rate team. And this has been the case the past 2 years, really, has ranked pretty low, bottom third nationally on offense. And it's been able to kind of flirt with 500, those two seasons, because it was a pretty good explosive play team. I think if you had the option, you'd flip those two. You'd rather be less explosive, more efficient. And I think that's where Nebraska wants to be.
They really didn't score and haven't scored the last couple of years unless they got that home run play. Even this year, you look at those big option quarterback runs or the option pass deep ball to Lloyd. That's how you got your points. Rarely was it 12 plays, 80 yards.
Yeah, it very rarely was. And, you know, and that comes with, I mean, I know Sims had played a lot of football at Georgia Tech, but first year at Nebraska, and then you had Harburg, and then Purdy after that a little bit. That comes, I think, with some youth and inexperience on offense. Same at wide receiver. Like, it's just, these college teams are very, very good, and the talent level's high, but they're not NFL teams. And it's hard for a college football team to consistently go 10 plays, 70, 80 yards, without something breaking down somewhere, which is why explosive plays take on such a huge role at this level. And you always take those plays when you can get them. But in terms of like setting out the chessboard, which is what we're doing now in the off season, I don't think that can't be your plan. That has to be the bonus.
Vogues, tell us about Counter Read. How can folks get signed up?
Yeah, just head to counterread.com. It's a twice weekly Substack from myself and Aaron Sorensen. You guys did a little talk on the physicality of Matt Rhule and whether teams were feeling it a week later. Earlier, kind of identified some of Nebraska's who I think are their handful of options for their quote unquote best player. Aaron will have a practice recap on Friday for everyone, some of the observations she had from Thursday's practice. So spring football firing back up. It's a great time to get involved. We'd love to have anyone as a free or paid subscriber.
All right. Get subscribed, counterread.com, Brandon Vogel at Brandon L. Vogel. Give him a follow on Twitter. Give him a find and follow with counterread, counterread.com. Vogues, will check in Saturday. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Good to hear from Brandon Vogel, Connor Reed, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark. Three-putt Mitch checks in, says Connor he'd like to go back and see Bartman, which is off the top rope. Tuck says he loved him some old Dodgers-Yankees rivalry, Lasorda v. Billy Martin.
Funny story about that whole Bartman thing. My dad was actually at that game.
Was he?
Yeah. He was on a rooftop. He still has the field pass from it.
Okay. Brennan asked an important question. What's the superior hot dog at a ballpark? And Brennan asks for, or says, Nathan's.
If it ain't red, I don't want it.
Right. I'm a Fairbury guy. But to be quite frank, Hebrew National hot dogs are undefeated. They're incredible. If I got to go somewhere other than Fairbury, Let's hear from Matt.
Wait. As a part-time employee of the Salt Dogs, I do feel inclined to say Sheboygan.
Okay. You just wanted to show off that, yes, you were in show choir. And
I was not in show choir.
You were.
Damn it. I was the president of my choir, but
you showed up to prom as a wizard one time. Uh-huh. He was in show choir.
No. No, I was in the Renaissance choir. Much different.
Dude.
The ladies loved us a lot less.
Completely. That's why you don't go.
I think Smitten are going to take off.
Yeah, you just sing your show tunes and yeah, enjoy yourself.
Hey, Sheboygan's got a catchy jingle. It's all
sure,
it is.
Yeah, and they're good. They're good. But they're, yeah. So the Pride of Fairbury, Bill Dolman, tomorrow would people's elbow us if we don't throw out the Fairbury hot dogs and the Chicago kids, the Danny Burks, the Cotter Clarks are all uppity about their hot dog choices. Matt Rhule, we didn't ask him about hot dogs, but he was asked about the quarterbacks, cut five here. How are those quarterbacks looking so far so good in spring?
Dylan and Daniel have done a great job of preparing within this offense. I think they know what to do. They know where to go with the football. They're on time. They're savvy. They're smart. So I've been really, really pleased. I mean, you can see what a bright future they both have. You know, Heinrich has done a great job of mastering, you know, kind of, you know, you go through last year, right? You're building for one guy. You kind of move into another. You know, now year two, we know who we are. We know what we have. We know the guys. Bring Glenn back into the fold along with us. So I think we've been really able to kind of, at least in the passing game, identify, hey, here's what we want to do. And you can see Heinrich being very comfortable with those things.
Can we squeeze in the comment from Rhule here when it comes to the quarterback situation? End of the season, cut seven?
We have 30 seconds here, so I
don't know.
No.
It's a hell no. So we'll hear from Matt Rhule what he thinks is realistic, his expectation by the end of spring for the quarterbacks.
You can hear cut seven at the other end of the
yes,
break.
So just be patient. 489-1240, 800-825-5865. More comments from you. Current or past player you'd want to go see most on opening day.
And? Don't
for MLB.
Here. The tease of the year, cut seven coming your way after the break.
Sure. Expectations. All right. Wind down hour one after this.